Before we jump into the podcast this month, I just want to say something to all of you leaders out there who are church leaders or ministry leaders or nonprofit leaders. Coming up in March, in fact, from March 11th to the 13th, we are hosting our annual Drive Conference. It's a conference designed for church leaders, but we have business leaders and marketplace leaders that attend as well. Again, the dates are March 11th through the 13th. If you are interested in coming or if you're interested in getting more information, please visit us at driveconference.com. That's driveconference.com. And if you'll use the code PODCAST13, that's PODCAST13 when you register, then we'll give you a big discount. Hope to see you in March at the Drive Conference.
Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll explore the importance of goal setting in the life of a leader. Andy, it's January and a lot of us are repeating our annual attempt to make and keep New Year's resolutions.
Yep.
Having known you for quite a while, I know you're not really into those.
Well, I'm not a big goal setter. I have 4 or 5 goals that hang on a little cork board in my closet at home, and I basically update those every year. But that's pretty much it. I don't have a sophisticated system, and I have friends that have these very sophisticated systems. In some cases, they pay lots of money to take classes on how to set sophisticated goals. In fact, I actually went to an orientation one time where there was a company trying to sell this sort of package. It was all about this way of setting goals. I was so exhausted by the end of the orientation. And it was so funny, Lane, because I had friends that were with me, several of us went, and they could not wait to sign up. And I told them, I said, you don't need this. You already do this. You're so wired this way anyway. Why would you pay someone to help you do what you naturally do anyway? I'm the one that needs the help, but I didn't sign up for the class. So goals are very, very important. I think everybody in our listening audience has set a goal for, you know, at some point along the way. I just think some people are more oriented that way than others.
So then does that mean you don't want to talk about goal setting?
Not really.
Okay.
Actually, I have a funny story about goal setting, and I don't think I've shared this with our podcast listeners, but when I was in high school, just stop me if I've told you this before. When I was in high school, my dad, who is like a huge goal setter, I mean, there's goals all over his office, and I grew up in that culture, which was wonderful. And so he was so frustrated with me because I didn't have any goals. So he gave me a little book on goal setting and put me in his office, his home office, with a yellow ledger pad and a pen. And he said, I want you to read this chapter in this book and then set some goals. And I'll come back and check on you.
How many weeks later was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, do you know how effective that was? And I just remember, I can still remember sitting there. I must have been maybe a senior in high school, just locked up like, I don't know what to write, you know, and he's going to come check on me. So sure enough, you know, he comes back a little bit later and I read the chapter and I had not written one single thing. And I knew he thought to himself, oh no, my son's never going to amount to anything. So maybe that's why I have such an aversion to goals. I don't know.
Well, Andy, having watched you for years, I know you set goals. They're just not, I guess, what we'd call traditional goals.
Yeah. One of the things that I teach leaders, especially college leaders or college students, is that it's a mistake. It's always a mistake to decide what you're going to do before you've determined who or what you want to be. And when I say what you want to be, I don't mean professionally. I mean what you want to be or what kind of person you want to be. It's always a mistake to determine what you're going to do before you decide what you're going to be because, as we all know, as those of us who are adults, we know that who we are and who we've become on the inside finds its way into all the things that we do. You know, I can set all kinds of goals as a father, but if there are things on the inside of me that aren't right, they're going to be manifested in the way that I parent. The same way in my leadership, with my friends, with my health, with everything else. So before we focus on to-do goals, I am a firm believer we have to focus on to-be goals or what we want to be. So today in our podcast, I thought it would be fun because I know everybody listening is a leader and they already have goals set. In fact, they set them at the end of last year so they could wake up January the 1st and hit the ground running and start checking things off and checking on their kids to make sure their goals are being met and checking their kids' goals off. So I assume we probably are, you know, all pretty good at that. But fundamentally, it's a mistake to decide what we're going to do before we've determined who or what we want to be. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about that.
Well, Andy, you know, what you're saying, the implications for leaders are obvious. I mean, if an average person gets that out of order, they decide what they're going to do before they decide what they want to be, they can damage themselves, maybe their family. But if a leader gets that wrong, it can hurt a lot of people.
You're exactly right, Lane. Our personal decisions impact the people around us, and the more influence we have and the more resources we have and the more people who are depending on us for their personal resources, the more people we potentially hurt when we don't get this right. And in fact, it's so interesting you say that because this idea or the impetus behind this idea of setting some or creating some be goals, not just some do goals, happened at a time when I remember sitting on my couch watching two very high-profile religious leaders fall apart publicly, you know, nationally, really internationally. Two guys that were at the top of their game, plenty of resources, lots of people around them, two international ministries. And one got in trouble morally, and the other one got in trouble financially. And when I say in trouble financially, they misused funds. One of these guys went to jail. Perhaps the other guy should have gone to jail. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, that could happen to me. I mean, they know everything. They don't lack insight. They don't lack resource. They don't lack education. I mean, they don't lack leadership skills. They had all of that. That's why they were so well known. But something on the inside, something went wrong. And I remember sitting there really, literally thinking, what can I do as a young leader to keep that from happening to me? Because I would be naive to think that I'm going to be so careful and so slick and, you know, so educated that somehow I would be immune to that.
All right. So you're sitting there as a young leader and you're seeing this and the fallout from it. What did you decide to do?
Well, again, you look back and piece things together. As it turned out, I had just begun, or I think I had just begun reading Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, a book that hopefully all of our listeners have read. And generally, when I read a book, and I bet a lot of our listeners are this way, you know, I read kind of quick. I tend to speed read. I read with a marker that slows me down. Mm-hmm. But when I get to a section of a book where the reader wants me to stop reading and, like, think about something or work through an exercise, I just plow on through because, you know, the goal is to finish the book.
Right.
You know, learn what you can, but you got to finish this book. Move on to the next book. Well, I think, you know, the perfect storm, I'm watching this stuff unfold. And again, our leadership, our podcast listeners, they don't have to look very far to see the same kind of thing that happens in business all the time. Smart, educated people make terrible personal mm-hmm. decisions and people are impacted. So it's certainly not unique to ministry. So I'm reading the book, I'm watching this happen, and I get to the section in the book where Stephen Covey recommends that everyone do a personal profile by thinking through what they would want the different important people in their lives to say about them at their funeral. So he says, imagine it's your funeral, and your spouse is going to speak, your coach is going to speak, a teacher, your best friend, someone you work with, someone you work for, a childhood friend. He gives several categories. And he tells the readers to actually write down what you would want each of those people to say at your funeral. And I actually stopped and did that, which I don't normally do.
You didn't even have a spouse at the time,
yeah,
did you?
That's true. I don't think I was married. No, I don't think I was married yet. But I actually, and again, he said, you know, what would you want your kids to say? So, I remember I got out a notebook and I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. This seems like a very profound exercise. I had no idea just how profound it was going to be. So I actually wrote a paragraph or two. Once I got into this, I sort of became the speech writer. What would I want to be said about me at my funeral? And the staggering realization or the staggering insight for me, which I think is true for anybody who's gone through this exercise, is that it had? I didn't have anyone saying anything about anything I did. There wasn't one person I imagined going, he was such a good speaker, or he built such a big ministry. I mean, at that point, I'd say in my life, but exactly, I guess, you know, at that point after my life, none of those things were important. And then later in that same section, he goes on to say that what you discover in that exercise is your personal definition of success. And I just remember thinking, that's exactly right. I have just discovered what success really is to me because I've just thought through what I want to have said about me when all is said and done. And when I've done all the doing I'm going to do, I don't even care if anybody talks about that. So that drove me then to begin to think through, okay, then, if that's what I want to have said, if that really is my personal definition of success, I've got to capture this in a way that I can carry it with me. It would be a mistake to say, hey, that was a great exercise. I'm going to move on, finish the book. And so that's what drove me to create these be goals that I talk about.
So, Andy, what did these end up looking like? Were they statements? Was it a mission statement? What does this look like when you make a be goal?
That's a good question. For me, again, this had to be portable. This had to be something that was going to stick with me. And so I came up with 12 words. I don't know why there were 12. 12 was too many, so I tried to get it down to 7 because I'm a Christian, and that's the perfect number. I thought maybe 3. Anyway, this isn't very romantic or cool, but I ended up with 9 words. And they weren't sentences, they weren't statements, just 9 words that I felt like these are the things that I want to describe me. Now, it was interesting because I went ahead and finished the book, and I had all this stuff I was working on, and then somebody handed me another book. It was, and it wasn't even a good book. I wouldn't even say the title because it wasn't that great of a book. But you know how that is. But there was one great takeaway from this book. And the author said that when you set a goal, you should answer the question, why? Why is this important? What's at stake? In other words, here's a goal I want to accomplish. What's at stake? What happens if I don't accomplish this? What's at stake if I do? What hangs in the balance? And I thought, that's a great question. So then I went back to my 9 words and I asked the question, why? Why should I do this? What's at stake if I don't? So I had my 9 words and I had my 9 answers to the question, why? And I'm telling you, Lane, this early on in my leadership created really a perimeter around my behavior. And I want to talk in a minute about why that's so important. But this was very time consuming. And again, I'm not normally one to stop and do that sort of stuff. But I'm telling you, it really, really marked me. And from that point on, that has been the foundation, not only of my leadership, but of all the other goals that I might set that would be more oriented toward things I do.
Well, can you give us an example of maybe a word or the question
that you're going to ask? Yeah. You know, in the early days, I used to give people all 9 of my words. And you know what they would do as I was listing my words? What do you think they did?
What I would do is I would go, those sound good to me. Yeah. I'll just use your words.
I would see people pull out their pens and they would write my words down.
That's right.
And I used to teach this and I would say, wait a minute.
Those are my words.
Yeah. You got to get your own words. So
your words.
Words. So okay. I want to give you a couple of examples just to get us thinking about this. One of my words was honest. I mean, how original. In fact, if I gave you all 9 of these, none of these are unusual. Mm-hmm. You would say, well, Andy, aren't those things everybody's supposed to be? I'd say, yeah, but these are things that emerged. They literally emerged from these many, conversations or things I wanted people to say about me. So one of the words was honest. So I asked the question, why is that important? I mean, I know I'm a Christian. It's a Bible thing. You know, we teach our children to be honest. But think about this. Why? What is at stake if I choose to be dishonest? That's a really important question. So again, you could write a book on the answer to that question. So I thought and thought and thought. And for me, and you may not love my answer, for me, the answer was that dishonesty erodes relationships. You know, I like to make things short and memorable, and that was it. Dishonesty erodes relationships, and that trust is the currency of relationships. We all know that. So being honest, that's kind of a nice thing. We should all be honest. But when I'm tempted to lie or not tell the whole truth or to try to look better than I really am by, posing or, again, just being dishonest, I'm struck with the fact, Andy, if you choose to be dishonest, you are going to erode this relationship. Do you really want to erode your relationship with Lane? Do you really want to erode your relationship with Sandra? Do you want to erode your relationship with Garrett, your son, or your Andrew? So it's not just a matter of being Sunday school honest. All of a sudden, I know what's at stake. Dishonesty erodes relationships. So, of course, some of you have heard me tell the story when when I was raising my kids, I used to tell them the worst thing you can do is tell a lie. The worst thing you can do is tell a lie. Why? Because dishonesty erodes a relationship. Well, that came directly from this sort of wake-up call, years and years ago. So, again, 9 words, 9 statements. I guess you want me to give you another one. Let me look at my dependable. One of my words was dependable, that if I told somebody I was going to do something, they didn't have to worry about it. They didn't have to call me. They didn't have to remind me that if I said I was going to do something, then I would be dependable. So I asked the question because in my little funeral deal, somebody stood up and said, Andy was dependable. If he said he was going to do it, you could always depend on Andy. I would love for somebody to say that. Well, why? What's at stake? Well, again, you think and you think and you know it's important, but why is it important? I realize, well, it's important because my willingness to be dependable really determines my reputation more than my promises, more than my words, that my consistency, when I say I'm going to do something and I do it or say I won't and I won't, that really ultimately determines what you think about me when you think about me. And that was important to me. So again, it, being dependable, it's not just a nice, well, we should all be dependable. Suddenly there was something at stake. So for each of these nine words, I went through and forced myself to ask the question, why, what's at stake, why is this important? And again, every time I entered that question, again, it's like a little bit higher fence went up around my behavior. And whenever I was or continued to be tempted to move outside that, you know, perimeter of these nine words, it really strikes hard at my conscience. Again, because years ago I decided this isn't an issue of just being a nice guy. This is success or failure for me as a person.
Hmm. You know, Andy, when you talk about that, I kind of think about it in the context of, you know, our friendship and then you as my boss, and I see how that's all played out. But one of the things that struck me, and I think a lot of our listeners could really identify with this, is you as a communicator, this whole idea of being committed to honesty, you know, that dishonesty erodes relationships, the authenticity with which you speak and you present yourself, I think has created a relationship between you and people who have never met you, who don't know you, but it's because you've been authentic. It's because you've been honest and you haven't, as you said, posed or put something else up there. you've experienced countless times that people have that relationship. And I think that's a huge win for a communicator.
Well, it's funny you say this. And I don't know if, I guess our podcast listeners think that we script all of this stuff. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. And today isn't very scripted. But I'll share one more because one of my other nine words is the word transparent. And I have always tried to be very transparent with my friends, maybe sometimes too much, and transparent in my communication. And again, I ask the question, why is that important? Why is it important? And it's because bad things grow in the dark. Mm. They just do. We know that. Yeah. Secrets are not good things. And we have all seen people who have carried things in the darkness of their soul and their heart, and eventually they surface, and they always surface at dangerous and difficult times, or they surface in dangerous times and they create difficult circumstances. So early on, I just decided I want to be as transparent as is comfortable for other people. I remember when Sandra and I first got married, and I would be speaking, and I would be like really transparent. And I realized, okay, once you get married, you can't be quite so transparent. I mean, I would make her uncomfortable with my transparency. So I learned, you know, you had
some guys haven't learned that lesson.
No, but they're really interesting to listen
they
to, aren't
they? Fun, yeah.
I just picture their wives sitting there on the front row, going, "Oh, really? I don't think I can go to your church anymore, honey." So again, that was one of those things, and I'm glad you feel like that has been transparent in my communication.
Yeah. Andy, I want to go back to something you mentioned just a few minutes ago, that as you were going through this process, that these words, these questions became more than a list of Sunday school, thou shalt not.
Yeah,
they took on a bigger meaning.
Yeah, and I did allude to this, but let me see if I can say it better. Again, because this exercise helped me, and I think it would help anybody discover their personal definition of success, then whenever I would wander outside the perimeter that these words set up for my behavior, it was more than simply doing a bad thing, or, you know, if I can use religious terms, it was more than just a sin. It was bigger than that. It was failure. If success for me is honesty, then dishonesty is failure. If success for me is purity, remaining morally pure, then impurity is failure. And so again, when these terms and these ideas were couched in that way, I'm telling you what, I found it so much easier to say no to opportunity, no to money, no to shortcuts, no to relationships, no to a whole lot of things I needed to say no to, because it wasn't just a matter of good and bad, right and wrong. Uh-uh. It was success or failure, because I discovered at the end of my life, if that's what was most important to me, then this was a really big deal. And I have tried to lead, I've led several small groups of young men specifically through this exercise. And even though I tell them my story, when they discover it for themselves, it almost takes your breath away when you realize, wow, as much as I may think money is what's most important to me, as much as I may think certain pleasures are most important to me, at the end of the day, I don't care if anybody talks about that stuff or not. So again, I think it creates the foundation for all the do goals once we determine what or who we want to be.
Andy, as we've been talking about this, it reminds me actually of something you talked about, I think, last summer on one of the podcasts, that really our definition of success comes down to the story we want to tell.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about this important question of what story do I want to tell, and that's what this is.
Right.
And because when you go through that exercise or a similar exercise, I'm sure there are other exercises people have read about that accomplish the same thing. But when you go through an exercise like this, you discover in very vivid detail the story you want told about you, which is the story that ultimately you would like to tell. And I think the clearer that is for us and the more clarity we have around that and the clarity around the discovery that it's not so much about what I do. Because again, after we leave home, there is nobody in our lives for the most part that are going to push us to become better people. We're just going to be pushed to do bigger and better things. But when we live every day with the reality of, you know what, as much as I want to accomplish and as big as I want to grow my company and as much money as I want to make or as big as I want to grow my ministry, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I've already predetermined that really isn't success for me. That's fun. We love to grow things. We love progress. But I would never, never, never want to sacrifice what I have already determined is success for me for the sake of material success or the rewards that come along with success. So it's a really powerful observation, and it's a powerful discovery. And I think the earlier a leader discovers that, the better.
All right. Let me go back and ask the question that you taught us to ask just a few minutes ago. What's at stake if we don't do this?
You know, Lane, that's such a great question. And here's what's at stake. A man or a woman can get through their most productive years in terms of business or ministry or building a company or a law practice or whatever it might be. You can get to the end of all that and be an absolute failure on the inside. And every man or woman knows they failed. In fact, come on, we're in ministry. We talk to men and women all the time who are late 40s, 50s, who would love to go back and redo their 30s and 40s, and they never want to go back and redo their business 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. They never want to go back and do their medical practice 30s and 40s. They never want to go back and do their, you know, professional 30s right. and 40s. They want to go back and do their relationship 30s and 40s. They want to go back and do their character 30s and 40s. Those are the deepest regrets. So at the end of the day, I think we all kind of intuitively know this is true. But if you don't pre-decide, and I think if you don't write it down, and if you don't write it down in a way that makes it memorable and portable, life pushes us outside the parameters of what we know we ought to be and who we ought to be. And once you're outside those parameters, no matter what kind of success you have, you'll always know on the inside, I have failed myself. I have failed myself. No one else may know, but I know I have failed myself. And that's a tough regret to live with.
All right, Andy, as we wrap up our time today, any final thoughts?
Yeah, this may sound simplistic, but I want to say something directly to our podcast listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be something in 2013. In fact, your husband or wife's already told you, hey, you're something. Why not decide what you're going to be? I mean, it's not like there's no neutral. I mean, we all end up somewhere in life. We choose where we want to be. So why not choose who you want to be? And why not take some time and think this through and write a few things down? And again, the sooner you do it, the better. Now, let me reframe our entire conversation maybe in a way that brings some clarity. Some of you listening today, your life would be you would be in a much better place in life if your father had worked through an exercise like this in his late 20s, or your mother had worked through an exercise like this and asked the question, who do I want to be? If their doing had been driven more by who they had decided to be ahead of time, you know, what you experienced at home would be so different. Perhaps your parents would still be together. Perhaps you would have grown up with a father in the home. If someone had decided that being precedes doing and being is more important than doing. On the flip side, your father may be your hero. Your mother may be your hero. And if that's the case, then I would guess that somewhere along the way, they discovered this idea. They discovered that it's always a mistake to decide what you're going to do before you decide who you're going to be. And you have benefited greatly from their decision. And now you have the opportunity to do the same thing for your family, for your kids, for your marriage, and for the next generation.
Well, Andy, thanks again for taking this time with us today. And thanks to our audience for listening. As Andy mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we'd love to have you join us next March for our Drive Leadership Conference. To register, you visit driveconference.com, driveconference.com, and just follow the link.